Hello, hello, hello. My name is Robert. I am the recovery guy, and you have entered into The Fix.
Being here and being a part of the recovery movement. I went to San Bernardino Valley College, and they're right over there. I actually graduated back in 1994, when many of you were still yet to be born or just very young age. And I did that at 7 years sobriety because, like many of us, I dropped out of high school when I was 18 years old. As an act of defiance, as an act of anger, as a way of clearing the table so I could drink on a regular basis. Because even at 18 years old, that's what I was all about. Just drinking, using, carrying on as if nothing else mattered but my selfishness and self-centeredness. And so going back to school when I was 39 years old was very important to me. And so if you see yourself as anything but successful and an opportunity, then you're looking through the wrong lens. Because at any moment you decide to be more than you were yesterday, you can make the same decisions that many of us make along the way and go back to school, get your education. Because I'll tell you, the doors that it opened for me as an individual are amazing. I worked in treatment for many years. And now I just sponsor and I go into treatment centers and work with other alcoholics and people looking to recover. And that's one of the common denominators that we can have between each other. One of the aspects that transcends the drugs, the alcohol, the gender, the race, ethnicity, everything is that we drank and used rather than facing life on life's terms. We found it easier to drink or to do a drug than we did to face the wife, to face the boss, to face the kids, to face the parents, to face anyone who was in our way from making what I call our feel good, feel good. And so we decided at a young age to go through life sideways. And in the beginning it works because it would take me from being an almost to a somebody. To somebody I never thought I had the potential to be, it transformed me, or I thought. But what it actually did, it nullified the pain. It muffled the pain. It set aside the pain so I didn't have to feel like a nothing. And when you come from nothing and you are nothing and you're always going to be a nothing, being an almost is as good as it's ever going to get, and it feels good in that moment. The problem and the challenge is that alcohols and drugs, they are progressive. And so that means, it introduces the word tolerance. And for me, I had to drink more today to feel the way I felt yesterday. And after you do that day after day, year after year, decade after decade, finally, as they say in Japan, first a man takes a drink, then the drink takes a drink, then the drink takes the man. And I was 26 years old when the drink had taken me. I no longer was involved in the equation of whether or not I drank or used. That decision was already made for me as I progressed in my illness. And there wasn't a job. There wasn't a relationship. There wasn't a marriage. There weren't children. There was nothing that was going to stand in my way at that time from drinking and using. And I went down and down and down. And everyone around me saw what was going on with me. I had brothers and sisters and mom and dad and ex-wives and children. They would all look at me and say, "What are you doing? You're giving away this life and we're trying to do everything for you." And yet I was going down and down and down because, again, I no longer had a choice. Drinking was making the choice for me. The drugstore was making the choice for me. And alcohol wasn't enough. And many of you who are straight up addicts, I hope you don't drink, because drinking will lead to drugs as much as alcohol will lead to drugs. They work tandemly together to get us to think that we can go through life sideways. But I would imagine that that didn't work for you because you're here in Cedar House, right? Cedar House is a place that is a refuge for people who have made a decision, who want to make a decision to not drink or use anymore. But that isn't even enough for us. That's how sick we are. And believe me, we are not bad people trying to get better. We're sick people trying to get well. We have a disease that almost mandates whether we drink or use. And that is highlighted by understanding what an obsession is. After I've been sober for a period of time, I still want to drink or use. Understanding the insanity of my addiction and the insanity of all the things I was willing to give away, I'm still willing to take a drink or take a drug and blow that whole thing up and burn that whole thing to the ground in spite of all the evidence that is against me with my addiction. Because once I drink, once I use, once I hit that pipe, whatever your drug of choice is, once I go down that road, I have lost all control again. So the only chance that you and I have is to redo our thinking. And that's what recovery, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what Narcotics Anonymous, and that's what Cedar House does for us. It's interesting that Cedar House is Life Change Center. And it revolves around the community. And today is a perfect example of what that community is all about. A community is a group of people based on a religious or social or a common cause that invites people to feel like they're a part of something when they previously weren't. And that recovery begins here because community begins here. And it's interesting that Melissa would say to speak on community, because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what these fellowships are. If you ever read the preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. That is what a community is. It's a group of people who have decided to go in the same direction at the same time that they might get well to help others get well. Because I'll tell you what, if you think that bartender cares about you or you think that drug man cares about you, go ahead and run out of money and see how much they care about you. They don't care nothing about you. They didn't care about me and they don't care about you. But the plan of recovery, the community of recovery, we are people who care. We are people whose life has made a difference in them, and their whole purpose in life is to make a difference in the lives of other people. And the more we do that, the more we're encouraged, the more we're inspired, the more we want to stay because we see other people joining the community and staying as well. And I'll tell you, the greatest gift of my recovery is going into treatment centers, is working with another alcoholic, working with another drug addict, working with an individual who thought they had no hope, and yet through our talk and our conversation and our fellowship, they finally believe there's a hope. And they can see themselves clean. They can see themselves sober. They can see themselves as a good husband, as a good mom, as a good parent, as a good child, as a good brother, as a good sister. They can see themselves in a light that they've never seen before, a light that we used to medicate against. And it hits everybody. Alcoholism and drug addiction, it doesn't care. It will affect everyone who decides to go down that path, everyone who decides to get high over a circumstance instead of feeling their way through it. And it was the same for me. You know, from the earliest age, I thought that I didn't matter. From the earliest age, I didn't imagine I had any value. And I used to go to bed at night and I would cry myself to sleep and I would wonder why it hurt so much being me. And you would wonder why at 5 and 6 years old you would ever think that way. But I was already set up. I was already feeling bad over things that weren't wrong. And by the time I took my first drink at 14 years old, it was a remedy. I could see it as medication of pain that I was experiencing. So the first time I drank because I could get away with it. But the second time I drank because of what it did to me the first time. And that opened up my path to addiction. In a relatively short period of time, between 14 and 18 years old, I started to make decisions that would affect the rest of my life. By the time I was 18 years old, I was dropping out of high school, and I was wanting to drink on a regular basis. I wouldn't have told you at the time that I was dropping out of school to drink, but that's exactly why I dropped out of school. And by the time I was 26 years old, alcohol and drugs had taken me to places that I'd never thought I would be. And I ended up in Las Vegas, where my California addiction was nothing compared to what my Las Vegas addiction would be. Because now I was in an environment where the drug and the liquor store was open 24 hours a day, accessible 7 days a week, nonstop. The lights were always on. And so my depth into addiction became worse and worse and faster and faster. And I like to tell people it turned a rear-end collision into a full head-on crash. And my bottoms were significant. My bottoms were drastic. My bottoms were painful. My bottoms, you would look at me and say, what are you doing? Why would you be willing to go through that to get nothing? But addiction had taken hold. But finally, when I was 32 years old, I looked in the mirror and realized that if something didn't change in my life, I was going to die, and there was nothing I could do about it. Nothing I could do. And fortunately, there was a treatment center that I was able to go into, a Nevada Treatment Center on Martin Luther King Boulevard in Las Vegas, Nevada. They didn't care if I had money. They didn't care if I had a job. They didn't care if I had insurance. They just cared about whether or not I wanted to change. And I did. And I went into treatment on February 9th of 1986. Unfortunately, I wasn't willing to get as honest as necessary to stay sober. So at the end of 71 days, I decided to go back out because to me, that was the easier, softer way. I thought I'd learned enough, thought I could control my drinking, control my drug use, but it didn't take long for me to understand that that ship had sailed a long time ago. It had sailed at least 6, 7, 8 years before that, and I stood no chance. But what I tried to do, I tried to recapture that moment of feeling like I was somebody. Because when you come from nothing and you are nothing, you're always going to be nothing. Being somebody is everything, right? You're never going to be great, but not hurting the way we hurt is a win to the battle. And so I sat in my hotel room in the Rhett Butler Motel in Las Vegas, Nevada on 15th and Fremont, and I tried to recapture that feeling of being an almost. I tried to remember what it was like to have enough alcohol and right combination of drugs to feel like I was going to be okay. And I could not recapture that feeling. I sat in that hotel room getting high and getting drunk for 5 days and realized that I didn't really want to die. I just didn't know how to live. So that day on April 25th of 1986, I walked back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have been clean and sober ever since. Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? And God continued to do for me what I could not do for myself. And I'll tell you right now, I do everything they told me to do when I first came in. I still go to 5 meetings a week. I still sponsor people. I still trust in God. I still have a sponsor. I still read the big book. I do everything. I'm like a big book thumper of thumpers, right? But that's the way I decided to live. And I don't know if I still live that way because I don't drink or use. I live that way because of the victory. At some point in our recovery, we turn from doing the things because it keeps us from getting high, but really doing the things in true sobriety get us enjoying the things that we've become accustomed to. You know, I tell people all the time, I've had three wives, right? My current wife, I've been married almost 35 years. I have 10 grandchildren. None of them have ever seen Papa drunk or high, right? That's crazy. I have 5 children. Only 2 of them have ever seen me drunk. And they're friends of mine today. These are girls that I moved out of the way so I could go get drunk or high. So if you're waiting for something to happen, stick around, because things happen over time. Just because we get sober in a vacuum doesn't mean our life changes overnight. We need to establish a pattern of sobriety that's continued. And little by little by little, the mom comes back. The dad comes back. You know, we're having relationships that are healthy. The children are coming back to us because they see sober mom, sober dad, sober brother, sober sister. The relationships in our lives start to come back. They're not always perfect, and some come back quicker than others. But the promise is, and I'm going to close with this because I told Melissa I'd speak for 20 minutes, although I could speak for 2 hours. If you were in my group yesterday, you know I can. And so the promise is, it says, if we are painstaking, listen to me now. Hey, I need your attention. If you're in recovery, you need to pay attention to me right now. Quiet down. Thank you. So here's what it says. Quiet down. Because I'm going to tell you what the big book says. Thank you. So it says, if we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We will know a new freedom and a new happiness. Now, how many out there today want to know a new freedom and a new happiness? Let me see, raise your hand. I know I do. And you know what's crazy? At 38 years, I'm still experiencing a new freedom and a new happiness. It's not like a vacuum where it stops. It goes and goes and goes. Today, I hope to be a better version of me than I was yesterday. Because every day I take steps 10, 11, and 12. I take my personal inventory every single day, which reminds me of my humanity, which leads me to God, which leads me to you. So I can't get away from this thing no matter what. But if you're not taking the steps, take the steps. Admit you are powerless over alcohol, drugs, and your life had become unmanageable. Come to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity. Make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand God. Not as I understand, as you understand God. Take a searching and fearless moral inventory of yourselves. And then in step 5, we admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact, not the approximate, the exact nature of our wrongs. And then in step 6, We were entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. And then in step 7, we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And then in step 8, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. In step 9, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And then, of course, we take our inventory in step 10. We pray to God for more power in step 11. And then we acknowledge that spiritual awakening, and we go try to help another alcoholic as we're practicing these principles in all our affairs. And the thing that's crazy about that is that hasn't changed since 1939. So when you got into treatment, when you came here to Cedar House, they didn't have to reinvent things because you showed up. We're not as unique as we think we are. Just like when I got here in 1986, they didn't say Robert Parton just showed up. Now I got to change this whole thing because this guy's crazy. We never seen this guy before. No, they just applied the same plan that worked for them to me. And it was up to me to accept it. And thank God I accepted it because I have the privilege and the opportunity of speaking to you today. God bless you all. Keep coming back. It works when you work it. Thank you.